Today's daf is Erevin daf Lamed Aleph. Today we're going to discuss three basic topics. Since we discussed the possibility of making, or we're going to start discussing, possibility of making an Erev of Truma for a Kohen in a cemetery, we discussed possibility of making an Erev of Truma, so we're also going to discuss the possibility of making an Erev for a Kohen in a cemetery, where a Kohen is not allowed to go into a cemetery, and we're going to discuss how to overcome a number of halachic challenges that situation may present, meaning if you have an Erev for a Kohen in a cemetery, how is he supposed to get to his Erev? And in that context, we offer three explanations for the basis of the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, whether in fact you're allowed to make a Kohen, an Erev for a Kohen in a cemetery. The Mishnah on the bottom of Amud Aleph is going to discuss Erevin made with all sorts of Truma and Maiser related foods, and which ones are valid, which ones are invalid, and the Gemara discusses the Chiddush of each line of the Mishnah, and then the Mishnah on Amud Beis on the bottom of Amud Beis is going to discuss whether we can trust the Chereshot of a Katan to bring an Erev to the spot, and that's going to begin the discussion of Chazaka Shliachos or Shlichuso. Do we always make an assumption that a Shliach will fulfill the Shlichos that you sent him to do, and to what extent any sort of assumptions can be made about a Katan when he is sent on a mission to do something? But let us begin at the two dots on Daf Lamed Amud Beis where we left off. So we left off at the Kohen Bebeis HaPras. So we said that you can make an Erev for a Kohen in a Beis HaPras. Because Rabbi Dor Shmuel says there is a way that a Kohen is allowed to go into a Beis HaPras. Again, a Beis HaPras is not a place that's Tamei Midoraisa. It's not a Beis HaKveros. It's a Sadasha Ovad Bo Kever or a Sadasha Nechresh Bo Kever. Either a Kever was lost somewhere in there, we don't know where it is, or it was there was a Kever that was plowed, and therefore there may be Etzim Kisaora at any given point. So let's say Sadasha Nechresh Bo Kever. One way to know that there's no Etzim Kisaora is you could blow away the top layer of dirt, and if you don't see any bones under there, you can keep on walking, and the Kohen can be safe to know that he doesn't have any problem of Tumah as he walks, because when you deal with an Etzim Kisaora, there's no Tumas Ohel. So if it's lower in the ground, where the Kohen's not going to touch it, if it's underground, it's not going to be a problem if it's an Etzim Kisaora. It's only a problem if he touches it as he is walking, so he just blows the top layer of dirt, and he could see if there's any exposed bone in that area, and if not, he could just keep on walking. So the Kohen does have access to a Beis HaPras. Rabbi Dibarami, Mishmed Rav Yudah, Amar Beis HaPras Shenidash Tohar. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, there's another way that the Kohen has access to a Beis HaPras, and that is any Beis HaPras that has been trampled on a lot, that a lot of people have walked through, is Tohar, because we assume that any bones that remain are even smaller than an Etzem Kisaura. Once it's been plowed over, it's as small as an Etzem Kisaura. Once it's been trampled on over and over again, we assume it's even smaller than an Etzem Kisaura. That's how Rashi explains. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Beis HaKvaros. Then Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, not only can you make an Erev for a Kohen in a Beis HaPras, you can even make an Erev for a Kohen in a Beis HaKvaros, in the cemetery itself. How's the Kohen supposed to get there to the Makom HaEruv? That's got to be his Makom Shvisa. That's his house. That's where he's living now. In the Beis HaKvaros, how's he supposed to even get there to get his Eruv? So he goes in a box. And the box causes a chatzitza between the Tumah and himself. The Tumah goes up to the bottom of the box and stops there. It's Mahil. The bottom of the box is Mahil over the Tumah. And therefore the Kohen inside of the box is going to be safe from the Tumah. Kasavar Ohel Zaruk Shmei Ohel. And this has to be working with the assumption that a moving Ohel still counts as an Ohel. Because while the Kohen is traveling in the box is moving. So it's not just Stam an awning that's staying in place, that's stationary, which would certainly be an Ohel. This is a moving Ohel. So we're working with the assumption that Rabbi Yehuda holds an Ohel Zaruk Shmei Ohel. And that's why the Kohen is going to be able to have access to this Eruv. And this is subject to the Machlok We assume all of Chutz La'aretz is Tamei Midrabanan. So what if a Kohen enters Eretz Ha'amim in a box? So Rebbe Mitamei, Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda Mitayer. Rebbe says it's Tamei, Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda says that it's Tar. So B'maikom Mefgi, what is the Machlokas Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda? Mar Sovar Ol Zoruk Lav Shmei Oel, Umar Sovar Ol Zoruk Shmei Oel. The whole Machlokas is, how do we view an Ohel Zoruk? Is an Ohel Zarek, is a moving Ohel, considered to be an Ohel, or is it not considered to be an Ohel? Tosa says a Chiddush on the bottom of here, where he says, Dafka Kishamuna Chave Ohel, that when we say Ohel Zarek, the Shita that holds that it's Shmei Ohel, that an Ohel Zarek works as an Ohel, that's only when it's not in transit. The fact that it normally moves is the weakness of this Ohel, but while it's moving, everyone would agree it's Lav Shmei Ohel, Tosa seems to assume. Av B'Shaz Rika Afilu Rabbi Yos review the Metame, the Bosa Sha'a Lo Chashav Ohel Klal. When it's actually being thrown, then it's not an Ohel at all. Midi Dahava Of Porech V'Atalasam Nafnefes, it's not Ba'ol Ostein Mavin Vein Chutzin, based on a flying bird or a waving talis, where the Mishnah says that it's not Mevi Tumah, it's not Chotzis B'Fnei Tumah. Sounds like everyone would agree that would not be an Ohel. The Ohel Zaruk, when it's not moving, that's the question whether it's an Ohel. I'm not sure how that fits in our sugya over here with the Shita Teva Migdal. He's got to move. He's got to transfer himself into the cemetery. Tosfos, I think, deals with it. I didn't really get to the end. But okay, so that's the comment that Tosfos has, that the machlokas is only while it's stationary, not while it's actually moving. This issue of Ohel Zaruk comes up in a number of contexts. Rav Shechter discusses it in his piece in Be'ikvei Atzon, where he discusses Kohanim flying in airplanes over a cemetery. A lot of times they'll have cemeteries not far from airports. So when the Kohanim fly, because there's a lot of noise pollution from airports, so when they set up a city, they'll want the dead people don't complain about the noise, so they'll want the cemeteries near the airports. So and even if not, in general, planes could fly over cemeteries all the time. So why aren't we worried? The halacha is that Tumas Meis is the Tumas Ola Ad the Rakia, goes all the way up to the Rakia. So why aren't we worried that the Kohanim are going to be Tameh from flying over the cemetery? The way Tumas Ola works, it can work in three ways. A person goes over the Tumah goes over the person, or the Tumah and the person are in the same room together. There's a common Ohel over them. Over here, the person is going over the Tumah, so shouldn't that be a problem? So that's a major discussion in the Poskim. Rav Moshe holds, no, the airplane is made out of a metal that is not Mekabel Tumah, because it's not Midaraisa, it's not one of the five metals that are mentioned in the Torah. It's made out of aluminum, which isn't really one of the metals, and therefore it doesn't become the bottom of the plane can serve as an ohel that's mafsik mipnei atumah, will stop the tumah from going up. It makes an ohel. If the metal itself became tameh, so that anything that's mekabel tumah is not going to be chotzitz mipnei atumah, it's not going to stop the tumah from going. But since it's a metal, it's made out of aluminum, where it's not going to, it'll have the ability to stop the tumah. But that assumes that ohel zaruk shmei ohel. That assumes that even though it's moving, it's still able to form an ohel. Rav Shechter has a different approach based on Rav Elchanan, that once you're above the clouds, that Tuma Ola Ad the Rakia is only when you're in proximity to the dead body. But if you're not in proximity to the dead body, where you would never even make the connection, you would never say that this is flying over a dead body. It's just so distant that you would never even associate the two. Then there's no din of tumah. The tumah would not. There may be a din of tumah, but there's no din of an iser for a kohen to become tameh in that way. Rav Chanan has this chiddush that the iser of a kohen becoming tameh is an iser of hiskarvus lemeis. It's not an iser of technically becoming tameh. With kama v'kama rayas, he has a lot of rayas to this idea. The halach of a goses, can a kohen be in the room with a goses? What would be the problem of being in a room with a goses? He's not tameh, he's not dead yet, but it's hiskarvus lemes. It's being close to death situations. That's the problem. Or the rokeach, the famous rokeach that the shach quotes, that the shach says a pregnant Ashes Kohen is allowed to go into a cemetery. Why is a pregnant Ashes Kohen allowed to go into a cemetery? Shouldn't she be worried about being metame the baby? So he says that's svek sveka. Maybe the Vlad is not going to be bar kayama. The Vlad's not going to make it. And even if the baby does make it, maybe it's a girl. So svek sveka, it's okay. And all the Archonim ask, what is he talking about? This is tumah balua. The halacha is when something is balua, it's completely enclosed within something else. The tumah doesn't transfer. So what's the concern of a fetus becoming tameh? doesn't make any sense. But if you say that it's not the din of Tumas Kohanim, is not a din in Tumah, it's a din of Hiskarvus Lameis, so then you understand that the fetus is having a certain Hiskarvus to dead bodies when you go into the cemetery, not a din in Tumah. Okay, that's also a phenomenal Chiddush, but he has a lot of rayas to that idea. Where this also comes up, Oel Zarek Shmei Oel, Halach Lameisa, is in the discussion about umbrellas, the Nadvi on Shabbos. The halacha is that you're not allowed to build a structure on Shabbos, and as we learned in Masech Shabbos, you're not allowed to make an Oel Arai on Shabbos. You're allowed to be Mosif al Oel Arai if you already have an Oel, so you're allowed to expand the Oel, but you're not allowed to make a new Oel on Shabbos. So what about an Oel that's made to be constantly moving? Like when you take out an umbrella, you carry it and you move with it. So is that called making an Oel Arai on Shabbos? Now the Yehuda has a tshuva in Madura Tinyan or Chaim Simon Lamed about an umbrella, and he first describes what it is, how you carry it, and when it's very sunny it protects you, when it's raining it protects you. And the person who asks the question said that he received a letter from a certain chacham, and he had written a letter to a certain chacham asking this chacham, how could you not stop people in your family from using this umbrella, making an ohel on Shabbos? And the chacham responded to him with all sorts of kulas, with all sorts of reasons why we could be makel on the umbrella. And the shovel in the Nod Yehuda was trying to say that I don't buy any of his arguments. I think it's absolutely wrong. It's a problem of making an ohel on Shabbos. So the Nod Yehuda, the shovel in the Nod Yehuda says, so I want to know what you have to say. I had this argument with this chacham. What do you have to say about this? So the Nod Yehuda says, first of all, I read the chacham's response. He is certainly a chacham. He knows how to learn. I disagree with him la halacha. I don't think he's correct, but he's certainly a chacham, and he deserves respect for that. So what were the reasons for heter? So one of the heterim was that since the umbrella is constantly moving, doesn't stay in one place, so you can't consider that an ohel, because an ohel is only when it's stationary. When something is an ohel zaruk, it's lav shmei ohel. It's not om makom echad. It wouldn't be chotzitz mipnei atuma according to Rebbe, who we paskin like, the Raman paskins like. So the umbrella as well should not be considered a real ohel, because it's an ohel zaruk, and ohel zaruk is lav shmei ohel. So therefore, opening it on Shabbos should not be a problem. That was the taina that this person has. So the Yehuda rejects this because he says, if you look at Tosos in our sugya, the Tosos asked the Kasha from the Gemara Maseches Sukkah, Daf Chaf Aleph, where the Gemara describes when they would bring the water, Litzorech, the Para Aduma, they would have to get water that was absolutely done b'tahara. They would raise it in order to do the Para Aduma process. They would raise children already from a very young age in a completely pure environment, on a cliff where there was no tuma anywhere near them, and it had to be on a cliff that just in case that underneath the cliff there were dead bodies, the cliff itself would stop the tuma. And then when they had to go draw the water, they would go on the backs of animals and on boards on the animals' backs, so that in case they passed over any tumah, the tumah would stop. So the Gemara describes this whole process, and when they wanted to sprinkle the ashes on the kohen, they would bring these wide animals. When they wanted to get the water to mix with the ashes that they burnt for the Parah Aduma, they would get these wide animals, and they would put doors on the backs of the animals, and the children would sit on those doors, and in order that it would make an ohel between the ground and whatever kvarim might be in the ground, and the children that was sitting on top of it. So Tosfos asks, wait a second, isn't that an ohel zaruk? So how does that help? I mean, the children are riding on these animals, the animals are moving, so that's an ohel zaruk. So it shouldn't be chotzis mipnei atuma. So Tosfos is mitarets that we hold ohel zaruk is those who hold Oel Zaruk is not considered an Oel, hold like Rabbi Yehud over there, that the Delassos, the doors, were not on the Shvarim, they weren't on the oxen, rather they would ride on the oxen themselves, who had these wide bellies, and the oxen themselves wore an Ohel. And even if you hold Oel Zaruk, Lav Shmei Ohel, so the oxen are an Oel Zaruk also, because they're also moving? No, he says, that's not going to be a problem, because when something is part of a living creature, then that's always considered an ohel. Even if it's moving, it's considered an ohel zaruk. So even though, and it quotes from a pasuk in Iyov, ubaatzamos v'gidim tisochecheni, that it counts as a good schach, as a good ohel, if it's atzamos v'gidim. So or and basar are considered schach, even though it's a part of a balchai, and the balchai is always moving. That's the yisod the Tosel suggests. So if that's the case, that pasuk is said legabe adam, that's said about people. So we can see from there that, so it's a kal v'chomer, that if it's true of adam, it's the belly of a behema is also considered an ohel. And Tosel also quotes b'shem the Rashba, that since the doors were placed on the oxen, they have a din ohel, even though it's an ohel zaruk, because the oxen themselves have a din ohel, so the doors that are on top of the oxen also have a din ohel, because they're sitting on top of an ohel, meaning, first teretz is, forget about the doors, there were no doors, they were just on the animal themselves, and the animal themselves has a din of an ohel, because it's an animal. If it was a door or an inanimate object, it would not have a din ohel, because it's moving. But an animal, even as it's moving, has a din ohel. Second answer is, even if there's a door on top of it, once the door is on top of an animal, so then it has a din ohel. So says Nadav Yehuda, brilliant. He says, how does an umbrella work? A person has to carry it. So it's going, it's on top of a person. So even though an umbrella in its own right, you would say, oh, it's an inanimate object. When it's an ohel, zaruk it's lav shmei ohel, it doesn't count as an ohel. But if a person is holding it, and a person himself counts as an ohel, so then, according to Tosos, that which is on top of the person, like the door on top of the back of the animal, is considered an ohel. That which is on top of the person, the umbrella, is also considered an ohel. So Nadav says, that's why I have a problem with this heter of using the umbrella on Shabbos. I think it is considered an ohel. The Chasam Sofer in a tshuva in Archaim Simanayin Beis has other reasons to be matir opening an umbrella on Shabbos. So he says, at the end of the day, he goes through the whole sugya and he says there's no real iser in opening an umbrella on Shabbos, but mishas chasidim, it's a good thing to shomer nafsha yirachik mimenu, a person should try to stay away from this. There's no iser daraisa, no, probably no iser drabanan either, but a person should try to avoid this. You have to say some sort of uvdu d'chol, that's what the Chazanish says in Orchaim Simon base. Very hard to figure out exactly what the real iser is in opening an umbrella. Nadabuda notwithstanding, it could be if you look at the description of how the Nadabuda Yehuda describes how an umbrella worked is different than ours. It had to actually be constructed. It wasn't just a simple open and closing. So it may be more of an issue that the Nadav Yehuda was machmir about, as opposed to ours, which maybe we there wouldn't be as much reason to be machmir. But no, be that as it may, the overwhelming minhag Yisrael, whether it's uvdu d'chol or something else, is that we don't use umbrellas on Shabbos. The other discussion that poskim have over here is about traveling in a car. Can a kohen go in a car on Harazim? Is that going to be an Oel Zaruk that won't be Chotzeitz Bifnei Atumah? Okay, there's a lot to discuss over here, but we have a lot to do in today's daf, so let's keep moving over here. So v'had the time, we haven't gotten to today's daf yet. Last line of daf Lamed Amud Beis. V'had the time, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ma'arvin L'Kohen Tohor B'Truma Tohora B'Kever Hechi Azil B'Shida Teva Migdal V'Kivin Da'achta Itmila. He says, wait a second, how can you make an Eruv for a Kohen with Truma Tahora in a Kever? Meaning, we discussed making an Erev with Truma in general, for a Yisrael. We discussed making an Erev for a Kohen in a Kever. What about using Truma Tahora for a Kohen in a Kever? So Rabbi Yehuda says, that's okay, you could do that. You could use Truma Tahora for a Kohen in a Kever. So ask the Gemara, how? If you're using Truma Tahora, isn't it becoming Tame? And there's an Isser, you're not allowed to be Metame, Truma. Says Gemara, b'shalah huchshra, oshen ilosha b'mei peros. Either you're dealing with a fruit that never came in contact with water, or even if you're dealing with dough or with a cake or something like that, you have to assume that it was when it was kneaded into a dough, it never came into contact with water. It came into contact with mei peros instead. And the halacha is that mei peros do not have the ability to be makshir lekabel tuma. Food can only become tame if it first comes into contact with one of the zayin mashkim that are makshir to be makabel tuma. Otherwise, it could come into contact with all the tumma in the world, and it will never become tame. So that's what we must be talking about. We're talking about truma foods, let's say truma apple or pomegranate that never got wet from any water, or even truma grains that have been made into a cake or a bread, but they're made into a mizonos roll. They were nilosh b'mei peros. They were not nilosh. They were not kneaded with water, so they never became hukshal kabal tumma. Mei peros is not one of the zayin mashkim. If you use apple juice, not one of the has to be pure apple juice. If the apple apple juice is mixed with water, so then the water content counts as water. That's one of the difficult things with mezonos rolls, is that if they could use apple juice, but if there's a lot of water in the apple juice, so then the water still counts as water. You need rov me peros in order for it to be mezonos. You also need not to have tzuris apas, not to be kovei suda. Okay, anyway, v'heichi maisila. So how can we how can you bring it in the first place? So meaning the Gemara's question, heichi maisila, how can the kohen bring the truma into his box without becoming tameh, without the kohen becoming tameh, because he's going to have to reach over from inside his box to retrieve the truma, but here he is in a beis hakvaros, so isn't he going to become tameh? So the Gemara b'pshutei kli etz lo mekabli truma. He uses flat wooden utensils to pick up the truma, so he never actually leaves the box. No part of his body leaves the box. He sticks out these flat kli etz, these flat wooden utensils that cannot become tameh, and he uses them like chopsticks, and he uses them to pick up the truma that's on the floor. The Tosfos points out over here, the mashmos is that pshute kliets are not even mekabel tumah midrabanan, that there's no tumah for pshute kliets, and he says it's really mashman that way from Mishnah and Kalim in the second parak, umaisla parakamid shabbos, quoted at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, that kliets u kli zechuchis pshuteim tahorim umekableim tumein, that it says over there that kliets and kli zechuchis, wooden glass kalim, if they're flat, they're tahor, if they have a base kibul, they're tame. Now, what level of tuma does a glass that has a base kibul have? So that's only tame midrabanan. So if we're going to say that it's considered tame when it has a base kibul and tahar when it's flat, so the implication is that when we say tame, we mean tame midrabanan. Tahar must mean even tahar midrabanan, that it has no tuma whatsoever. So we put pshute kliets and pshute kli zechuchis in the same boat. So the two of them are both tahar completely, even midrabanan. Tosfos later on though says that it's not so pashut, that there are a lot of pshute kliets that can become tame midrabanan. In the first wide line, Tosfos points out v'rime farish to kliets shem rechavim kein daf. So the Rabbanan word goes there, tuma. Let's say you have a tray, a wooden tray that is flat, but you use it to hold things on all the time. That's what its function is. If that's what it's used for, so that's already very similar to a kliets that has a base kibul, even though it doesn't have a physical base kibul, but it's always used to hold things. But if it's a narrow pshute kliets, like a chopstick, where it's not, you can't put anything on it to hold. You can use it to maneuver and to squeeze things, but you can't put anything on it to hold. So tahor nafil midrabanan. That would be tahor even midrabanan. That's our daf yomi coincidence, that here we are a couple of days after Parshas Shmini. That some of the medrash in Shmini suggests that a baker's rolling board, the board that he uses to roll out the dough on, that they were gozer tumah on something like that, because it's constantly used by people. Okay, back in the Gemara, but we have another challenge. Okay, we discussed how it could be that the truma is going to be in the Beis HaKvaros. After all, won't the truma itself become tameh? We discussed how the Kohen is going to retrieve the truma without himself becoming tameh. He uses pshute kliets. But won't the kliets form an ohel over the tumah that will then transfer the tumah into the box? Meaning this pshute kliets is extending from the box, from inside the box, to over the kever. So shouldn't that make an ohel, and therefore the tumah is going to be transferred into the box, and the coin is going to become tameh? So demaisila achore. So says the Gemara, no, that's not a concern, because the part of the orachude, some have the girsa, the part of the kelim that hovers over the tuma is less than a tefach wide, and therefore cannot form an ohel. In order for anything to form an ohel, it has to be at least one tefach wide. So you're using chopsticks, now using something that's a tefach wide, in order to be able to lift up the truma that's on the ground in the Beis HaKvaros. So we just explained very well why it is there are Yudah holes that you can make an Erev for a Kohen in a Beis HaKvaros, right? Very good. You could have the Kohen has complete access to it, he's not going to become Tameh, he goes in his box, and everything's good. So, Frek Ligmari, Yachim Ma'itami Rabbanon, we explained it so well, we no longer understand the opposing point of view. Why did the Rabbanan hold by a Beis HaKvaros? I understand, says Rashi, that they're just going to say Ohel Zorik Lav Shmei Ohel, and the Rabbanan will say using a box isn't good enough. But why did the Rabbanan hold you can't make an Eruv even by a Kever Yechidi, even by an individual lone Kever, where the coin's not going to have to be in an Ohel Zorik? He'll just have to stand beyond the Kever and use his chopsticks to get the food. So what's the problem? What would be the issue of using, of making an Eruv by a Kever? So the Gemara is going to have three explanations of what the Yisod HaMachlokas is between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Explanation number one is, Kasavri Asur Liknos Bayis B'Yisurei Hana'a. Number one is that it could be that a Kever, since a Kever is Asur V'Hana'a, Asur B'Hana'a, you're not allowed to be Kone a Bayis on Yisurei Hana'a. If you look at Rashi, Asur Liknos Bayis B'Yisurei Hana'a, B'Kever V'Ha Hana'a Hi D'Mishtri Be'Lemepak Chutz L'Tchum. This is called Hana'a in that he's now allowed to go further. He's allowed to walk outside of his tchum. The kol tashmishe ames asurim bana. Any sort of benefit from a dead body is asur bana. The nafgalen b'sanhedrin mi v'tamas sham miriam v'gamar sham sham egla rufa. The Gemara in Sanhedrin derives this from the pasuk v'tamas sham miriam. We associate the word sham in that pasuk with the word sham in the context of egla rufa, and the halach is by egla rufa it's asur bana. So we assume that a mace is also asur bana. V'afilu b'yisrael nami Asri Rabbanan, Vaditani Kohen, Lodiach Kochet Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, the Rabbanan's Shita has nothing to do with the fact that the guy is a Kohen. You can't make an Erev by a Beis HaKvaros. No one is allowed to get Hana'a from a cemetery, from a Kever. Forget about Beis HaKvaros, from a Kever. No one's allowed to get Hana'a from a Kever. It's a Mace. Getting Hana'a from a Mace. You're not allowed to get Hana'a from a Mace. Even Yisrael is not allowed to have an Erev by a Kever. So says Gemara, Mechal de Rabbi Yehuda Savar Mutter. So it makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's mutter, so it must be kasavra mitzvos lav lehanus nitnu. Why does Rabbi Yehuda hold it's mutter? Because this is not called getting hana. You're doing a mitzvah of setting up an eruv. That's not called hana. That's a mitzvah. When a person takes a neder that he's not going to get hana from something, he's still allowed to do a mitzvah with it because mitzvos lav lehanus nitnu. Elahadam rava mitzvos lav lehanus nitnu lema katanayam l'shmeite. So what? So then it turns out that the mahomach looks Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is: do we consider the making of an eruv to be Hana'a? They're arguing about whether mitzvos lehanos nitnu or mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu. Very unlikely, because we know this is a klal we say in Gan Shas, mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu. Now we're going to say it's a machlokas tanaim whether mitzvos lehanos nitnu, Rava's klal of mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu, is really subject to a machlokas tanaim. Very difficult to say. The Ber Heitev in Hilchos Chanukah and Siman Tov Reish Ayin Gimel quotes from the Shaar Ephraim that you're allowed to use neros Chanukah that are made with oils and fats that are basar b'chalav, because even though basar b'chalav is asar ba'na, mitzvah slav lehanas nitnu. So you're allowed to use it for the sake of neros Chanukah. So some of the poskim are not so pleased. Shari Tshuva points out that it's a misquote. He says if you look in the Shaar Ephraim never says that. Shaar Ephraim actually concludes the exact opposite, that you're not allowed to use basar b'chalav that are asar ba'na for neros Chanukah. He says you're right, mitzvah slav lehanas nitnu. So there's no iser hana'a in lighting such oil. But there's another problem, that since you need to light Neros Chanukah with shemen that could stay lit for a half an hour, and anything that's asur b'hana, we say is kitusei mechtas shiurei. We assume that it never has the full shir. A lulav shel asherah, a lulav that's asur b'hana, we assume can't have the full shir of a lulav, because we view it as if it's chopped up into a million pieces. Kitusei mechtas shiurei. So whatever the shir shemen is by Ner Chanukah, if it's asur b'hana, it's kitusei mechtas shiurei. So enochinami, it's no problem of hana'a, because mitzvah lav lehanas nitnu, but it's a problem of kitusei mechtas shiurei. That's why Shlomo Zalman is not sure. Is there such a din of a shear of oil? It's a din of how long it has to stay lit. But is there an amount of oil you need? I mean, let's say you don't have enough oil. So what could you do? Make thinner wicks, and then it will stay lit for longer. Is that a din in a shear of oil? So that's why Shlomo Zalman is not convinced by that argument. In Mincha Shlomo, Tinyana, Simen Unches, he's not really convinced by that. There's also a major discussion in Poskim. What if a person buys new Svarim? Should a person make a Shechianu when you buy new Svarim? So do we say, Mitzvah Slav Lehanos? No, you make a Shechianu when you get Hana, when it's something that gives it brings you simcha. But mitzvah salav lehanas, that's what the Achronim discussed. The Egle Tal in the Saktam, the Avnei Nezim, the Saktam at Egle Tal discusses that maybe Talmud Torah is different. Maybe Talmud Torah is dafka lehanas. And when a person learns, a lot of times people have the wrong attitude. They think that when they're learning, they're supposed to be suffering. That this is avodas Hashem, and therefore it should be hard, it should be difficult, it should be... No, learning is supposed to be geshmak. A person's not supposed to feel that it's a pain. The person should feel that it's enjoyable. That's part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, says the Avnei Nezer, is lehanos nitnu. Other mitzvahs are lav lehanos nitnu. But this is dafka HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to get a hana, a geshmak from the mitzvah. Anyway, that's not what mitzvah lav lehanos nitnu means. Meaning mitzvah lav lehanos nitnu doesn't mean you're not supposed to enjoy mitzvahs. It means that the enjoyment one gets from mitzvahs is not halachically considered hana, in that if you have an isra hana from something, that's not going to be a problem, because the enjoyment you get from mitzvahs is not halachically considered hana. But of course, there's no problem with enjoying mitzvahs. But anyway, that's the first explanation of the machlokas, that they're arguing about whether mitzvahs lav lehanos nitnu or not. The Gemara says very hard to believe. So Amalecha Rava, Rava suggests second possibility. If we hold that you're only allowed to make an error for the sake of a Devar Mitzvah, well then everyone would agree that it's fine because mitzvahs lav lehanos nitnu, you're not getting any hana. Who says making this Erev is a mitzvah? Who told you to extend your tchum? This is, if you hold like the Shita that you're allowed to make an Erev, even for the sake of a Devar Rishos, it's not only to go hear the Chacham speak in the next town, you know, to learn Torah, it's to do a Devar Rishos. So if that's the case, then there's no mitzvah over here. And that's why it's a violation of the Hanah. But then Rav Yosef's statement that you're only allowed to make an Erev for a Devar Mitzvah is also subject to a Machlokas Tanaim. So we're right to have a problem. If this is the Machlokas Tanaim, then Rav Yosef was only going within one side of Machlokas Tanaim. So third explanation. Everyone would agree you can only make an error for a Dvar Mitzvah. And everyone would agree Mitzvah Slav Le'anos Ninu. What are they arguing about? One Shita will hold that once you've already made the Eruv, Rav Yehuda would hold that once the Eruv takes effect, the owner doesn't care to protect it, so you're not actually getting any Hanah from the grave, meaning once it takes effect, okay, now I can walk the more than 2,000 amos from there, so I'm not actually getting any continued Hana from the grave. And the Rabbanan would say, no, you want the Erev to be protected over there, so that if you want to eat it, you could eat it. So therefore, it is called that you're getting Hana, as a violation of getting Hana from the grave with the continued existence of the Erev. Next Mishnah, Ma'arvin b'dmai, we're allowed to make an Erev with dmai produce that we get from an Amaretz, that we have suspicions about whether Maisros were taken from it, or b'maisa rishon shenatal trumaso, you're allowed to make an Erev with the Maisa Rishon that Trumas Maisa was taken from, or with Maisa Sheni Vagdish and Iftu, or with Maisa Sheni or Hagdish that has been redeemed and is therefore no longer Maisa Sheni and Hagdish. Vakohanim b'chala, Kohanim could make an Erev with Chala, because the Chala is one of the Matnos Kohuna, it's like Truma, it's given to the Kohen to eat. Avalo b'tevel, but you're not allowed to make an Erev with Tevel, because no one's allowed to eat Tevel. Velo b'maisa Rishon shalom it's a Trumaso, you're not allowed to make an Erev with Maisa Rishon that the Trumas Maisa wasn't taken from it, because before the Trumas Maisa was taken from Maisa Rishon, you're not allowed to eat it. And Maaser Sheni and Hegdish that have not been redeemed, that still are Maaser Sheni and Hegdish, you're not allowed to make an Erev with. So the Gemara is just going to go through each case of the Mishnah, what the Chiddush is, what the Mishnah is teaching me. Demai halo chazilei. So wait a second. Demai, why are you allowed to make an Erev with Demai? You're not allowed to eat Demai. So why should you be allowed to make an Erev? And so the Gemara, Miko Dibai Mafkalu Lenichse, Vaviani, Vichazilei, Ashnami Chazilei. Demai can become mutter for you to eat. All you need to do is become an Ani. How do you become an Ani? Be Mafkir, everything you own. An Ani is allowed to eat Demai. Since the whole concept of Demai is only Midrabbanon, the Rabbanon never imposed that hardship on an Ani to have to worry about Demai. Ditnan, Machilinus Aniim Demai. We can feed Aniim Demai, Vesachsania Demai. And we could feed visiting soldiers demai. Amrav Huna Tana Beishamei Omrim Ein Machlinas Aniim Demai O Beisilol Omrim Machlinas Aniim Demai. It's Machlokes Beishamei Beisilol, but we pass like the Beisilol that we're allowed to feed Aniim Demai. So that's why you're allowed to make an Erev with Demai, because everyone could theoretically eat Demai. All you would need to do is be Mafker all your Nechassin. O Beisil Rishon Shnitla Truma. So we said you're also allowed to make an Erev with Maisa Rishon that Trumas Maisa has already been taken from. Unlike Truma, which you give to a Kohen, and therefore Yisrael is not allowed to eat it, has Kedusha, Yisrael is not allowed to eat. Maaser Rishon you give to a Levi, but Yisrael is allowed to eat it. The Levi can distribute, can share it with his Israeli friends. There's no Isser of a person eating Meiser Rishon. So once the Trumas Meiser was taken from him, what in the world would be the problem? Why does the Mishnah even need to tell me? Pshita! Of course it's a good Erev. Lo tzricha shekdimu b'shibalin. No, the point is that you took that you took the Truma Gedola when it was still in its stalk, meaning the Trumas Meiser was taken even though the Truma Gedola was never, meaning the Truma Gedola was never taken from it. You took this Meiser before taking the Truma Gedola was never taken from it before taking the Meiser Rishon, because the Meiser Rishon was taken before the threshed grain was put in a pile and never became chayv in Truma. They're not the men of Truma's Meiser, but not the men of Truma Gedola. So therefore, you took Truma's Meiser from it, but Truma Gedola was never taken from it. Normally, you don't take Meiser until after Truma Gedola is taken. But over here, you jumped the gun and you took Meiser Rishon before you ever took Truma Gedola. Ukut Rabbi Avo Amrei Shlakish. And this is like Rabbi Avo Amrei Shlakish. Amr Rabbi Avo Amrei Shlakish, Meiser Rishon Shekdimo B'Shibalin, Pater mi Truma Gedola. If you jump the gun and you take Meiser Rishon before the grain is piled, the threshed grain is put in a pile, so then you could avoid the chiyuv of Truma Gedola. Shenema vari rumos men of Trumas Hashem, Meiser min a Meiser. Meiser min a Meiser, amarti lach, v'lo Truma Gedola, Trumas Meiser min a Meiser. That you take Meiser from the Meiser, but not Truma Gedola and Trumas Meiser from the Meiser. Amle Rav Papa Abayi, so Rav Papa says Abayi, Iachi afilu k'timu b'krin ami. Then even if you took even at an earlier stage, even if you were makdim b'kri, it should also be the same din. So amalei alecha amakra mikol ma'asroseichem tarimu as kol trumas Hashem. So that's why the pasuk says mikol ma'asroseichem tarimu as kol trumas Hashem. That no, you need to you need to take truma. So mari is so you have two pasukim. One pasuk seems to say you don't need to take truma. The other one says you do need to take truma. So how do we know that we dafka lock it into this time period where the grain has already been threshed but has not yet been put into a pile? Ha'idgun v'lahalo idgun when it's hikdimu b'kri, it's already idgun, it's already been threshed, and since it's called dagan, it becomes tevel for truma. But when the Levi takes it, it's still not loidgun. When the case where it's not yet put into a pile, it's not yet idgun, and therefore when the Levi takes it, it's not yet tevel for the sake of truma. Ubemaiser sheni vehegdish shenivdu. We said maiser sheni and hegdish that has been redeemed and is therefore no longer maiser sheni and hegdish you're allowed to use for the eruv. So pshita, of course you're allowed to use it. Lo tzricha shenasa nasa karen v'lanasa nasa chomesh. No, the point is you redeemed it, but not properly. Normally, when you redeem Meiser Sheni and Hegdish, you have to pay an extra chomesh, which, as we've pointed out many times, means a chomesh milavar, an extra 25%, and not an extra 20%. But you redeemed this Meiser Sheni and Hegdish without paying that extra penalty, that extra fee of 25%. So the Mishnah is teaching me that yes, you're supposed to take that chomesh, but it's not ma'akev. You can still be yotzei without taking the chomesh. Avalo b'tevel, but you cannot use tevel. Pshit, of course you can't use tevel for an Erev. No one's allowed to eat tevel. L'tshicha b'tevel tevel midrabanan. Now the case is that this is something that's only chayiv v'maisos in the first place midrabanan. It's not chayiv v'maisos midaraisa. Okigon shezara ba'atzit sheinu nakum. For example, it was planted in a flower pot. The produce grew in a flower pot that didn't have a hole in the bottom, so it wasn't really growing in the land, and therefore it's only a din midrabanan that you'd even have to take trumas v'maisos in the first place. V'loba maiser rishon shalanitla trumaso. Also maiser rishon that trumas Meiser was not taken from. Also, you're not allowed to make an Erev with. Pshita, of course you're not allowed to make an Erev with it. It's Aser! Lo tzricha shekdimu b'kri, v'nothim menu trumas Meiser, v'lo nothim menu truma gedola. Again, the same case we said before. You came in b'kri, and you took trumas Meiser, and you didn't take truma gedola, and you didn't take Truma Gedola from it. You see, before we said Hikdimo B'Shibalin, now we're saying you go back B'Kri and you take Truma Smeiser without taking Truma Gedola. So I might think like Rav Papa suggested to Abaye that even that should be okay. Kamash Malan Kedeshanile. So no, the Kamash Malan is like Abaye answered that no, it's only if it's B'Shibalin it's okay, but not if it's all the way B'Kri, that would not be okay. V'loba Meiser Sheni V'Hektish Lo Niftu. Meiser Sheni and Hektish that did not have, that were never Niftes, also, you're not allowed to use for an Erev. So Pshita, of course, you never redeem them. Why should they be able to be used for an Erev? Lo tzricha shapadim lo padim kil chasan. Now, also, these were redeemed, but not properly. Meiser shapadu al gava simon. It's a meiser that you redeemed using a coin that doesn't have an image on it. V'rachmana amar, the Torah, when it describes how to use a coin to redeem meiser, it says v'tzarta hakesef. Kesef sheish lov tzura. It has to dafka be kesef that has a tzura on it, that has an image on it, and therefore if you use one that doesn't have an image on it, the pidyon is invalid, and since the pidyon is invalid, that's what the Mishnah is referring to when it says shalom niftu. Doesn't mean that it wasn't redeemed at all. It was just redeemed poorly. The pidyon was invalid, and therefore you're not allowed to use it for an Erev. Hekdish, what would be the situation where you pod the Hekdish in an invalid way? Shechilo al gav karka, drachmana amar v'nasna kesef v'kamlo, where you're mechal the Hekdish onto karka, and the pasuk says v'nasna kesef v'kamlo, which we darshin, as Rashi points out, v'nasna kesef b'makdish sadeu ksiv. It says this in the context of someone who's makdish his field, v'yosef chamishis kesef erkecha, that he has to add kesef. The point is that you're not allowed to be mechalal it on karka. It dafka has to be on something that is like kesef. So I guess we'll stop there. But Hashem will pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow. All that's sending a katan to go make an eruv for you. Sure.